You're listening to the Why Big Football Show, the soccer show by the fans for the fans. If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with the show, drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. We'll chat to you soon. Come on, the boys in green. You're very welcome along to the Why Big Football Show, the Irish soccer show by the fans for the fans. I'm Dave O'Grady. We have a terrific panel tonight. We're focusing on the people who promote the game to the Irish audience, the people who we follow through thick and thin, and the people who bring us the joys of the tournament. It is, of course, the top journalists. I'm delighted to be joined by a terrific panel, Irish sports broadcaster and top soccer correspondent for RT, Tony O'Donoghue. Tony, thanks for coming on the programme tonight.
Thanks, Dave. No problem.
And we're also joined by a terrific Irish soccer writer, Miguel Delaney. Miguel, all the Irish fans have been on to me this week when they knew you were coming on the show about the terrific stories that you write. And I have to say, you seem to have an unbelievable insight into the game. Thanks a million for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem. We're also joined by two Y-biggers. First things first, Thomas in Cork. Thomas, you've been on the show before and you're on it again. We're delighted to have you. You must be delighted with Cork being back up in the top division of League of Ireland football.
Yeah, Dave, it's brilliant. And Shamrock Rovers on Friday night as well. It'll be a great night.
It will indeed, Tom. We're also joined by Neil, who's making his Y-Big football show debut. Neil, you're from Dublin, but you actually moved to Clare for quite a while. Are you more of a Bannerman or a Dub?
I'd consider myself a Dub, but all my mates are always saying you're from Clare, so you can judge in the accent, but...
All right.
I'd say a Dub.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of Dublin people, yeah, they'd probably say, yeah, you might be from Clare during the Listoon Varna festivals or that. You know, you might switch allegiances or that.
Getting to the stage now, I think I might have to start heading to that festival, but...
Yeah. Anyway, let's get down to the business, lads. And Tony, I want to come to yourself. You've been covering Ireland for years through thick and thin, no doubt. You know, we've seen pretty.
I'm like old Mr. Brennan for more years than I care to remember.
Ah, now, Tony, come on. We've seen the highs and lows, but now Ireland getting to the Euros for yourself, it must be extra special.
It really is, you know. It's hard to believe it's 10 years since we qualified for the last major tournament, the World Cup in Japan and Korea. And there's been many near misses, of course, because our level seems to be that we're good enough to get to a playoff. You know, we're third, second seeds in the groups, but not necessarily good enough to clinch it. But we were this time through a number of circumstances. And maybe this time was the most unlikely in some respects, because I think people were saying that we didn't have the talent and the players weren't good enough. And, you know, I'm beginning to see that's bunk, really, because I'm just looking at my potential squad that Travatoni might pick for the championships. And although many people say it picks itself, there's more options available now than I can remember as long as I've been following the game. And it's fantastic to see in all positions, in fact. So rather than it being a time of doom and gloom, I see a lot of good young players coming through, knocking on the door. Maybe it's too early for some of them for this particular championship. But, you know, what Travatoni has done has brought a certainty and a calmness of the squad. And I have to say, you know, they're probably better. Their achievement is better than the sum of the parts in some respects. They're not the world beaters all, and yet together there's a marvelous team ethic, and it's great to see their progress this year.
Yeah, Tony, you mentioned there it's been over 10 years or that since Ireland qualified for a major tournament, and you yourself, of course, have covered the major tournaments. It's quite special when Ireland are at one of these, and for yourself that's in the front line of it all, it does set the agenda for mainstream news. You know, RTE6-1, the main story will be from the Ireland camp in Poland.
Yeah, well, if you recall, the last time it wasn't just the sports section of the news, it was leading the main news, and that was, of course, the whole Saipan incident. And it probably remains the biggest story I've ever covered, and you know, people still talk to me about it to this day, and, you know, it was like the Civil War in Ireland. And in some respects, that still continues. And it just shows when Ireland qualify, you know, people talk, and I'm delighted to see the relative success of the rugby team, and, you know, the GAA championship in its season is great as well to see. But there is nothing like when the soccer team qualify for a major tournament, and the way in which it captures the imagination, the hearts and minds, if you like. It's, you know, the ads have started. I just saw Rob and Shay in a sticker ad last night for the first time, and that's the start of many, I suppose. But it's brilliant, really, because it's the 7, 8, 9 year olds that'll remember this, and there's plenty of heroes in this Irish squad for them, and hopefully a few more to be made in the summer.
There certainly is, Tony. And Miguel, you know, as Tony was saying, you know, we start seeing the beginnings of the ads and the Shay and Robbie in the stickers ads and that. And as I was saying, it does kind of set the agenda for news. I know Tony was mentioning probably for reasons that we would not have liked to with the whole Saipan thing, but also with the positive thing. I mean, for instance, if Ireland go to Poland and get results against the likes of Croatia, Spain and Italy, I mean, surely they'll be at the front of RTÉ 6-1 news or that kind of thing. And it's a special time for everybody.
Well, absolutely. I think nothing kind of captures a country's attention like a football World Cup. Even kind of as much as we're coming in quite a rugby country, I still don't think it engulfed the nation in the way previous tournaments have. And it's interesting Tony mentions Saipan. Actually, I was studying journalism during it in 2002, and subsequently actually did my thesis on the coverage of it. And now actually, the only two tournaments I've been to have been Euro 2008 and the 2010 World Cup with sadly departed Tribune. So it's going to be interesting actually, from a professional point of view, to be covering my own country at it.
Yeah, it certainly would be. But at the same time, Miguel, you know, the coverage is most newspapers will be bought and the news on television will be the sports section and it'll be in mainstream as well. So I think it's a time where kind of media in Ireland is at its prime.
Well, this is it. I mean, nothing does wonders for newspaper sales like a good sporting results. People want a souvenir the next day. So another reason.
Yeah. And Tom, I just want to come to yourself on this because you're a proud Cork man, and Tony was mentioning the Saipan situation. And were you one of those people involved in a civil war with your fellow Irish fans?
Yeah, I think, and probably still am, to be honest. You know, if you look around the forums, be it foot.ie or YB, you know, any time Roy Keane is mentioned, it's not too long before it comes up in chat. Yeah, as a Corkman at the time, certainly would have stood by Keane, and you know, whether Ireland kind of overachieved without Keane, you often think in that game against Spain when Spain went down to 10 men in extra time, what the likes of Keane would have done. But probably, I think Keane himself has admitted in interviews since that, you know, what he did was perhaps he overreacted somewhat, but. Yeah, as a fellow Corkonian, we'll stand by him through thick and thin, that's for sure.
No doubt. And Neil, yourself, I mean, when you follow the coverage, and I don't know, are you going over to the Euros this year?
I am, yeah. I'm heading out for the whatever it takes, whether it's where we get knocked out after the first round or if we go all the way to the final, I'll be there.
And you know, Neil, you probably remember in previous tournaments, if you aren't already at them, the coverage that we see of when Ireland are at a tournament, it is quite special, and everybody wants to tune in, say, to RTÉ to see the rows with Dunphy and the lads.
Yeah, no, I don't think, as Tony and the lads were saying there, I don't think rugby or really ever grasped the nation the same way the football team does. If you go onto YouTube and you see the scenes of around the walking sound roundabout, or just see in films like the van and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's just, I think football just gets everyone basically behind the team, whereas rugby kind of still at this stage is a niche.
Suppose the rugby being in New Zealand this year as well, and the time zone situation didn't help things particularly in that regard, and Ireland maybe had one really good performance and then didn't crack on and perhaps achieve as much as they might. So that might have been an issue. But this year for the European Championships, I think we got really lucky as well in that all Ireland's games are prime time. They could have had afternoon games in the...
It's not lucky from a writing point of view, so right up against deadline.
Oh, I suppose, but from a television point of view, I can guarantee you it's fantastic. It couldn't have gone better. Yeah. And so all of Ireland's games, and we'll have every game, by the way, in the European Championships, bar the ones, you know, the simultaneous ones.
Yeah.
So no other station in these islands can say that. So we're really proud and pleased about that, and we hope we'll bring a really good show to the nation. Yeah. And it will be the talk of the nation, that's for sure. But and I'm expecting huge, huge viewerships as well. Now, whether, and this is something I have a concern about, and, you know, I'm not being negative at all, but you know, when you look at the opposition, Croatia, Spain, Italy, there's every chance that we may not win a game at these championships. I hope not, and we have, again, I imagine, overachieved at every championships we've qualified for. But I just wonder, in terms of expectations, are the fans going out there expecting us to win the thing, expecting us to get to the next round? I'd be interested to know what Tom and Neil think.
Yeah, Tom, coming to you, I mean, how do you think Ireland are going to perform? I mean, we had Enda Brady on the show there 2 weeks ago, and he was making the point that he believes that the Irish fans will completely get behind the team and Ireland will give it 110%, kind of like the way Ireland play in away games, and which is pretty good, it's fair to say. How do you think we're going to do? Because as Tony was saying, we are in an unbelievably hard group, and it's going to be hard to get out of, or even perhaps even score a goal.
Yeah, no, those, and probably, you know, they often say the best way to answer a question is ask one back. So I'm probably going to ask Tony the exact same question. But, you know, I think if you took off your Ireland jersey and looked at the team, yeah, you know, we're not probably as good at them on paper. But, you know, I think under Trapattoni, I think we've only lost two competitive games in the last 4 years or something like that. We've only really, in my opinion, been blown off the park once, and that's against Russia. So,
yeah.
No, I wouldn't write us off, and I suppose, you know, I've heard comments in the last couple of days from the likes of, I think, the young Eamon Dunphy's these days, Richie Sadlier, going on about how we're going to be blown off the park at each of the games, and I just wonder what the two lads, what their own opinions are, how we'll go against the three teams.
Just to interject there, actually, with all the debate about Trapattoni's style, I actually think, had we been drawn against an easier group, then there might be more merit to it, but I actually think that these three games, Trapattoni's setup is perfect for them, particularly against Spain, because, I mean, the one competitive defeat Spain have seen in the last 4 years was against a team that set up like we do in that Switzerland game. So, it's interesting. I, to be honest, I think we'll get 2 points. I think we're unlucky that the Croatia game is the first match, because first matches tend to be kind of, teams are kind of feeling their way into the tournament, they don't want to commit too much, and that's probably the most winnable game, so it would have been nice to have been the second or third game. But I think we'll draw with Croatia and Italy, and I to be honest, I can see Spain probably eventually scoring against us and maybe getting one or two.
Yeah, Neil, do you hold that kind of a little bit of that optimism, I suppose, that, you know, Ireland will bring 100%, and no matter what, we're not going to be blown off the park? And as Miguel was saying, we kind of do better against better teams, and had we been in a group with lesser teams than the quality we're playing against, it mightn't have been in the advantage to the Irish. This is certainly a chance.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think as Miguel was saying, the opening game would be pretty cagey. So if I was a betting man, I'd be saying a draw in that game. Unfortunately, I think we'll be going into the last game needing a win, and I actually think we'll be going into the last 10 minutes. Either hanging on to the 1-0 or chasing a goal. I think that's what will come. It's just the way Ireland is always, it'll always come to the last. I don't think we'll be out of it, and I don't think we'll be through.
Yeah, Tom, you were going to come in there.
I think actually, as a fan, I'm going over to the second two games, and my big fear is that I think the first game is massive. If we lose that, we're in serious trouble, because, you know, most people would back Spain against us, and it could end up where the last situation we want is where we're going into the Italian game and it's a dead rubber, we're gone. So I think as long as we pick up a point against Croatia, which I think we can do, it's probably going to be 0-0, pretty boring stuff. It means at least we're getting three, you know, games in which we're competitive, which we're in it, and I fancy us to get something against the Italians. Why not? You know, we played them three times on the Trapattoni, you know, never been beaten and won once, albeit a friendly. So bring them on, that's for sure.
Exactly, Tom. And just Tony, coming to you on the point, why is it, do you think, that Ireland tend to play a lot better away from home? We've seen it in the qualifying campaign and even in friendlies. I mean, we went to Liège and we defeated Italy 2-0. I know, albeit it was a friendly, but what do you think it is about the Irish team that they perform a lot better? Is it Trapattoni's tactics that they're set up for playing better away from home?
This will sound like I'm sucking up now. I know this is the Why Big podcast, but I have, I'm certain of this. It's an awful lot to do with the travelling fans. It really is. I think I appreciate the company of my fellow scribes, my fellow journalists and broadcasters, but I also like on the away matches to go and find the fans. And I have to say, and in all sincerity, when there was a lot of negativity about this group and this group of players and the team and Trapattoni, you didn't find that negativity among the fans. There's a core group of fans that travel everywhere, be it a friendly match or a competitive match. They travel away in numbers, they're a tight-knit bunch, and they believe, they have faith. And I think they've created a bond with this group of players that I haven't seen before in all my years following Irish teams. And of course, there were some amazing moments for Ireland in Giant Stadium, in Genoa, you know, in Stuttgart. But nonetheless, in adversity, if you like, the Irish fans and the Irish team, and the team talk about it. I've met them a lot since qualification, because we did the documentary, The Cat is in the Bag, looking back at the road to Poland. I was over talking to Richard Dunn recently because he was injured, of course, and couldn't come over to receive his International Player of the Year award. But the players will tell you, I was just talking to Shane Long last week, they really feel that the fans have been so important on this journey. And when the journalists were negative, and maybe I was in that camp myself for a while, the fans weren't, the fans were positive. And I think you could see the growth of character of the team, the growth of spirit, and it had an awful lot to do with the relationship they have with the fans. Obviously, tactics are important, and the way Trapattoni plays, as Miguel was saying, it might be to our advantage to be the away side, to keep our shape, to catch them on the break. As I look at the games, and I'm not wishing to be too negative, but I think the first game is crucial. That's absolutely true. If we draw that, it might be cagey. I expect the World and European Championships champions, Spain, will be better than us. But I think we'll actually beat Italy. It's something that we've gotten good at. I think we're freaking the Italians out at the moment. Our training camp is in Montecatini in Tuscany, not far away from where the Italians are. I know, as in Bari, there will be hundreds and hundreds of Italian media descend on the Irish training camp. And who loves that more than anybody? Giovanni Trapattoni. He will absolutely love it. You know, I remember him coming to the press conference in Bari. He's practically getting a standing ovation. Yeah. The respect the man has in his native Italy, much more so than he has among certain quarters here, I have to say. And I think they're expecting Trapattoni to have some little trap for them. I don't think it's the greatest Italian team of all time either. And I think by then, you know, the shackles will be off. And it'll be interesting to see who we have on the plane, and by then who we have between yellow cards and injuries, who we have in our first 11.
Indeed. And Miguel, just to further on a point that Tony made about the fans and the relationship that the away fans particularly have with the Irish team, and that, is there a situation where the home fans, do you think, tend to put maybe the Irish team themselves under a little bit of pressure? They, you know, when things aren't going well and they're not playing the expansive open football that I suppose a lot of people want to see, that it puts the team under pressure and the fans kind of, the home fans get on the players' backs?
Well, funnily enough, actually, I was going to make that point, because I think it's a matter of perception. When we're playing at home, there's a certain expectation to beat a team that takes the game to the other side, to be on top. Whereas when we're playing away, there's more of an acceptance that we have to be a little more cautious and be slightly more strategic. Whereas Trapattoni essentially seems to approach every game the same way. So even though the performances don't actually differ too much, the fact that there's different expectations in the away games and the home games provides a different perception of them.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right. And just looking, I suppose, at the Irish players at the moment, a lot of fans have raised it on the forums and that about the, particularly the Wolves players, and they seem to be struggling to stay in the Premier League. Tom, coming to yourself on this, for the likes of Stephen Ward, Kevin Doyle, Stephen Hunt, Kevin Foley and that, is it a concern that all these players will be playing in a relegation kind of dogfight this year? Will that, do you think that'll be something that'll affect them in Poland?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think they'll see it almost as a break from it. It's a pretty nasty atmosphere in Wolves by all accounts at the moment, and you know, not all of the lads are getting their games there. But you know, even if you again contrast them back to O2, if you think, you know, there was players like Gary Breen, you know, Kevin Kilbane, McAteer, who weren't getting their game in, week out, and they loved coming and playing for Ireland. They did a great bond with McCarthy. So you know, again, on the face of it, yeah, it should have a problem. There's, you know, players will be out of form, but I think it could work to our benefit. We'd probably have players fit. They'll be, you know, eager, willing to get away from their own club situation. So I think in those situations, those particular lads, it could actually be to our benefit in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, how about that, Neil? Do you reckon it's going to work to Ireland's benefit that particularly the lads that we have at Wolves, they'll still have that fire in their belly? But there's no doubt all Irish players will have the fire in their belly. But the fact that these lads will be in quite a dogfight by the end of the season, they'll still be kind of raring to go for the Euros.
Yeah, I often think with international football, especially with Ireland, I think short-term club form is often irrelevant is probably too strong a term, but it doesn't seem to matter as much with the Irish team. I don't think the short-term form at club level seems to have such an impact.
Yeah, I probably agree with you there. You know, it seems to be like players, a lot of the Irish players that we've seen, they might not be even getting their games for their clubs, but they can still come over and do it for Ireland, you know.
McIntyre is a classic case, and Robbie Keane was struggling this late last year and banged in two goals away in Macedonia. So, I don't think, because it's kind of a club atmosphere with the Irish team, it doesn't seem to matter as much as it might do with, say, England or another team like Italy or something.
Yeah, it's certainly a unique characteristic that the Irish team have. Tony, you mentioned earlier about you're curious to see, you can't wait to see who actually makes the plane. There's loads of names being thrown about of who could be in, who could be out. You know, Trapattoni might have said there's place for one or two or three players, but then he'll come and he'll say that he's keeping a close eye on all these players. Is there any player that you think will force their way into the squad?
I'd like to say yes. I doubt it, I'm afraid. There was a lot of talk about James McLean, of course.
Yeah.
He got, 11 minutes? But really, there isn't enough time to play your way in. I expect, as good a season as he's had, that there'll be a little tailing off in tapering off in his performances between now and the end of the season. If he makes it to Poland, which would be great, I don't think he'll see any action unless, as I say, suspensions and injuries mean that the last game against Italy, and we may be forced into taking a bit of a chance. But we can almost tell you now, our first 11 for the Croatia game, certainly, and possibly the other two, if all things being equal, everyone is fit and safe and well and on the plane. After that, of course, I'd like to see James McCarthy. He's just as likely as the Wolves players, more likely indeed, to be involved in a relegation scrap as well. And I do think it's important because I think, and Trapattoni has mentioned this before, the mental shape of the players, how they come after a tough season where they've been fighting every game for their lives, and if they end in relegation, you know, that won't have them in the right space. So they'll have a bit of a job. Remember with Kevin Doyle last year, he spoke about him not being right and his head not being right. So it's something he considers. So they'll have a job for the players who may be relegated to get them in the right mental space and the right shape to take on the best in the world.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Miguel? Do you reckon James McLean or James McCarthy, as Tony was saying, James McCarthy is going to be in the centre of a dogfight with Wigan? It seems he gets so many minutes. Enda Brady was saying, I think he played more Premier League games over the past two seasons than any other Irish player, and you know he's going to be right in the thick of it come the end of the season. Any chance of going to Poland for James?
To be honest, after the the odd that episode with Green, his recall and the way he kind of jumped ahead of the pecking order, jumped up in the pecking order with a substitution, I actually fear for McCarthy's place in the squad, which I think is a great shame, because I've seen I think there's been a little bit of not quite a backlash, but a little bit of commentary about him that maybe people don't think he's as good as it's been made out, or they're kind of critical of some Irish supporters putting him forward as the solution to all problems. I do think he is an absolutely superb young player, I have to say. I think he's such a tidy midfielder, great vision. I think it would be very sad if he didn't at least come with the squad.
And we were talking about Miguel a couple of weeks ago on the programme after he had a game against Chelsea. I know Chelsea, I think, beat Wigan 2-1. But James McCarthy, he had been cleaning up so many Wigan mistakes. It was unbelievable.
It's interesting, actually, because the role he's playing for Wigan at the moment is actually quite similar to Glenn Whelan's with Ireland.
Yeah, central holding midfield, yeah.
Yeah, now the one thing you'd like to see in his game more, although this might be Martinez's instructions, you'd like to see him kind of surge forward, maybe get amongst the goals more. I actually always remember Roy Keane's comment about what kind of what almost completed him as a player was Brian Robson telling him to go from a good player to a great player. You've got to take risks. You've got to make that final step. And you might like to see a bit more of that from McCarthy. But again, of course, if he was in a Trapattoni's team, that wouldn't be allowed from that Glenn Whelan position.
Yeah, it's funny there, Miguel, you've used the word risk and Trapattoni in the same sentence.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He wouldn't be allowed. And I think Roberto Martinez has brought him in that central holding, and he's done quite well, you know, for Wigan. And so hopefully he might make the plane. Neil, I just want to come to you on a point. I've been looking at young lads this week, over the past few weeks actually, and we've seen the likes of Joe Mason, an Irish under 21 player, and the likes of Robbie Brady. They've been very impressive for their clubs. I mean, Joe scored in the Carling Cup final or that against Liverpool, and Robbie Brady has been bringing back the form that he had. I know Robbie has had a few problems with injuries or that, but it's good to know that there's a couple of lads on the way up, coming up the ranks, and hopefully in the future we'll get to see these lads.
I think with Ireland there always seems to be kind of a level of a player, kind of the next best thing type thing, so I wouldn't get too over the top about that, because especially at that level, kind of championship level, we always have a steady kind of progress, or a steady bunch of lads. It's the kind of slightly higher level than that we've kind of, I won't say struggle, it's the exceptional level we don't have enough of.
You mentioned Brady and Mason, and they're definitely two to watch. Brady in particular, I think, could be a key player for Ireland in the future. But you look at players who aren't going to make the squad, perhaps, probably not indeed, but are young enough to be the mainstay of Ireland in the future. And I've always said that young David Myler, now maybe it's my Cork connections, but he'll be a powerhouse for Ireland in the future. I see a potential Ireland midfield in the future of Myler and McCarthy, McLean. You know, you look at the defence and you look at Clark and what he can bring to the game. Duffy has a chance of getting on this plane, although whether he takes 7 or 8 defenders is debatable. I think he's wondering, he thinks defenders are more likely to get yellow cards. Maybe he should take an extra defender, and Duffy is certainly worthy of consideration. You look at the goalkeepers available to us, and to see young Stephen Henderson called up to the squad after Westwood's injury the last day, that it just shows throughout we've got potential, we've got youth, and they're already garnering a lot of experience. And of course, I'll finish on a controversial note as ever, but I would just love, it won't happen for these championships, I would just love to see Stephen Ireland bossing our Ireland midfield, running the game for us as he's capable of doing. He seems to create the same sort of reaction in people as Roy Keane did all those 10 years ago. But his form recently again for Villa has been outstanding. Look, it's a complex issue, but I think that was then, this is now. I think, you know, let's leave the blame behind. I think we should get our best players on the field, our best Irish players, and with those players, Brady, Myler, McLean, McCarthy, Ireland, Duffy, Henderson, I mean, we've got an Ireland team that could go on and qualify and do well in Brazil and beyond.
Yeah, well, certainly, Tony, you know, I was definitely planning on having a Stephen Ireland section on the Why Big Football Show one week, but I was too afraid of what the reaction might have been. Miguel, just on the Stephen Ireland thing, as we might as well talk about it, I know I've read comments over the past 2 weeks that he was saying that he's wishing all the Irish players the very best of luck, and he'd never envisage himself going on the plane. He believes that the players who got them to the Euros should play there, and that he was talking about going there as a fan. But he also said that, as Tony was saying, that was then and this is now, and he's matured a lot. And back then, when he was only 21 at Manchester City, he had a young family, and it was very difficult for him, and that's why what happened then happened or that. But I mean, would you be one of these Irish fans looking for Stephen Ireland back? Now, I'm an Aston Villa fan, and I'm still kind of a little bit indifferent about it. What do you think?
Again, I think he's a superb player. Now, actually, I remember there was a famous quote from a City coach that just towards the end of his stay there, Ireland, they said, the backroom staff believed that Ireland was among the top 5 players in the club in terms of technique, but among the bottom 5 in terms of mentality. And even that's, even sometimes with Villa, you can still see that in his game, the way he kind of swung out at the weekend. To be honest, I'd be willing to overlook his previous problems with Ireland, I have to say. I don't know where he'd fit in, actually, in the Trapattoni team at the moment. Unless Trapattoni was willing to... This would necessitate dropping Robbie Keane, which isn't going to happen. But he's going to play a kind of a 4-5-1 with Ireland as a kind of a number 10. I mean, I'm interested in keeping our options open as possible and having as good a team we can. So I'd certainly be willing to overlook his history.
Yeah, well, we'll see about getting Stephen Ireland maybe on the show 1 week, and we can see what he has to say himself.
Well, you know what, Dave, that would be great, because I think, what do we know about Stephen Ireland, and how do we know it?
Yeah,
we know it mostly through the back pages of newspapers, and through kind of some stupid things that he might have done, perhaps. But yeah, you know, he had an interesting goal celebrations once, and interesting underwear. He had a car with pink hubcaps. He's had photographs in his house where he looks like he's been doing some crazy things. But yeah, he's young. He's done some crazy things. You know, Balotelli is young and a bit stupid as well.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take from the fact that we don't really know the guy too well. When I have met him, he's appeared to me to be very intelligent, soft-spoken, sensitive, I'd even say. And, you know, I think tabloids, and that goes for radio and television as well to an extent, do look to make cartoons out of some of these people. And that's a bit unfair, because, you know, there's more to him, and in terms of character and certainly in terms of ability. And I really do think it's an important function of management: get your best players on the field. And, you know, that's something that Trapattoni, if he's to remain on in the job, has got to look at doing, and Marco Tardelli, and indeed, there should be pressure brought to bear on them from the FAI to make sure that our best players are there wearing the green.
Indeed, and just, Tom, just to come to yourself on this one, obviously, and like Tony, another Cork man, what would be your views towards Stephen Ireland making a return? I mean, he has indicated that he wants to come back.
Yeah, I'd probably be the exact opposite, to be honest. It'd be no for me, and certainly not for the summer. You know, we talk about him maturing. Yeah, we don't know much about him, but it's funny. We could probably get his girlfriend or wife on the show pretty handy.
Yeah.
She's
I was thinking that she seems to be pushing his international prospects much more than he does.
Yeah, she's on that Saturday night show every few months saying, oh, he'd love to come back and all this sort of thing. And all we've ever heard from him is, I think, something like, never say never is his favourite phrase or something like that. You know, I think, you know, if he is mature, if he does want to come back, you know what, just come out and say it. I don't think he'd fit into Trapattoni's plan either. I agree with Miguel. I couldn't see him fitting in. So I think it's probably academic, really. But, you know, I think, you know, he needs to approach Trapattoni rather than the other way around. He's had more than enough chances at this stage.
Well, hopefully he does, and hopefully, I suppose, after a couple of games, all would be forgotten, as they say. Lads, just before we finish the show, I want to get a view from each of you on the League of Ireland this year. And Tony, I want to start with yourself. And, you know, you're covering the League of Ireland to great depth. It's terrific to see it back up and running. And, you know, I think the summer soccer is just exactly what the league needs. But this season, do you think Shamrock Rovers are about 5 steps ahead of every other club?
No, I don't, actually. I was in Drogheda for the first game of the season. I was in Bray last week, and I thought Derry City were very impressive. Summer soccer, you might say, but it was blooming cold out in Bray, and it was a huge win there. Derry look really, really good. Patterson is going to score goals for them. In fact, I'm sure he could well rival Gary Twigg in the leading goal scorer stakes. McLaughlin looks like another McLean in the making. He's a strong, pacey, direct, very skillful. They've got a lovely blend of youth and experience, Derry, now. They've got Higgins and Malloy, Doherty in goal for them, and Stuart Grecian at the back. So they've been there, done that, some of them, playing a lovely brand of football. They'll have a huge support at the Brandywell. Not saying that Rovers won't have a huge support and won't be involved, but look, Rovers went behind in each of their first two games, and to Stephen Kenny's credit, didn't panic, and quality eventually came out. But there was such a shock in the Carlisle grounds when we heard that Monaghan had taken the lead against Shamrock Rovers, and when Drogheda took the lead the week before, it just shows that if you apply yourself correctly, they're not unbeatable. What concerns me, I have to say, is Cork City's first couple of results, because obviously I would have a soft spot for them, and delighted to see them back in the Premier League. Now, going to see them this week against Shamrock Rovers as it happens, and that'll be a very important game, because if Rovers win their third game in a row, that'll mean Cork will lose their third game in a row. So a team that some people fancy that it's Cork now for maybe an outside chance of finishing high in the league, well, 3 defeats in a row will be difficult to take. But I think what I've seen so far, Rovers, of course, have depth in their squad. They've got a great manager in Stephen Kenny, so of course they'll be there or thereabouts. But from what I've seen last Friday and from their previous results and their Setanta Cup exploits, Derry will be good too. And it remains to be seen if the Sligo Rovers situation, where Paul Cook left so late and you know, they only replaced him with only a couple of days to go, and whether that affects Sligo, but they're certainly good enough to mount a challenge as well. I'm really looking forward, I have to say, to this season, and I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, Miguel, it's great to have, as Tony was saying, Cork City back in the Premier Division, and also we have the likes of Shelburne, who picked up a good win over Dublin rivals Bowes.
I was at it, actually, yeah. I've actually been to both Shell's games so far this season. I was there at the opening day as well for their match against Sligo. I was very impressed with Sligo. That was a game played at a tremendous pace. And we were talking to Ian Barraclough after the game. Came across as came across very well, very composed, very different to Cook. Just to go back to what Tony was saying there, though, the one thing about Rovers I think gives other teams hope is the fact that after a fair few years with what was a fairly rigid style from O'Neill, they're gonna need to adjust now to a new style of football, and that might take a little bit of time. In fact, we've arguably seen the evidence of that with the way they've gone behind in both games. But the one thing, because of the sheer resource they have, the bigger, better squad, you'd imagine weight of numbers will tell for them. I mean, that's probably the one problem with Sligo and why I couldn't see them win a title is because the squad isn't big enough.
Yeah, and do you think, just coming to Neil on this, we looked at the big signings away from the league, and Tony was mentioning about, you know, Derry, they seem to be producing these terrific players. We seem to like James McLean and that, and Lafferty are that gone away. Is it true to say that the league is getting much more recognition by what it's produced over the past few years? We've seen players go to the Premier League and make it, and the likes of Keith Fahey, he went over from a young age, didn't make it, came back and went back and now he's a terrific player for Birmingham City.
Yeah, there was an interesting debate on M&S the other night actually about the success of the Cypriot team, and there was a good point made, like that the League of Ireland has produced over the last few years a number of players, as you've mentioned already, and here's a Cypriot team that's a load of money put behind it and gets to the quarterfinals of the Champions League with 8 Brazilians in the team.
Yeah.
Is that success? I would rather... Obviously, you'd want a mixture, a bit of both, but I don't think some sugar daddy coming in, bringing in a lot of foreign players to a team is naturally success.
To be fair with them, though, they do. I mean, they've got a budget of about, I just can't remember the figure, but it's unimaginable by League of Ireland standards, and they've got very big crowds every week. So even though it's a smaller country, the actual leagues aren't comparable in that sense.
Yeah. Well, I would like to see, like, the Cypriot national side have dropped since we played them under the Stompin' era. Have dropped down the rankings and half as good as they used to be. So I would like to see the league holding on to players a lot longer and players going, if they have to, and if they're good enough, going away when they're 23, 24, having a good number of years as a hardened player under the belt.
The one issue I think I would raise, and it's actually quite a strong feed on this thing, is essentially in terms of producing players, although John Delaney has talked about kind of bringing in a pyramid scheme, Ireland's whole football infrastructure essentially is still too broken. There's still not enough links between schoolboy clubs and League of Ireland clubs. Still basically, I suppose, too much rivalry essentially over players. And where, like, ideally, it should be something like the Dutch League, where essentially the League of Ireland is a finishing school for players like that. It's a pyramid up to it. And so, to a degree, we're still kind of making these players by coincidence rather than design.
I totally agree with you. I wasn't going to pretend that it was some sort of grand plan that caused this. But it has happened nonetheless.
Indeed, and just on the promotion and the, I guess, production of the matches, Tony, you know, I think a lot of Irish fans and Irish soccer supporters really enjoy the M&S on a Monday night or that, and of course the RTE's coverage of a game. I think that seems to have really boosted obviously the league themselves want supporters going to the games, but the fact that a match will be available to every house in Ireland every week, it's pretty impressive.
And not wishing to sound too much like a company man now, but free-to-air as well. And we're doing more live games this season than we've ever done before between the league itself and the FAI Cup, of course. And Monday Night Soccer, for the people that work on it, it's more a vocation than a job, really, because we've a small, tight-knit team, and we love the game, and we have many, many arguments ourselves over lunch. About who's the best player, what's the best goal, you know, what's going to happen, and we have a laugh. And it's I hope the inferiority complex of the league maybe ending, and some of the fans as well, because, you know, some of our players have gone on to great things, and some of the games are comparable in standard to so many other leagues. There's no question about that. What brings us down a bit, I suppose, is, you know, if you were going to see a show in a theater, you'd have, you know, great lights, great backdrops, great setting. Sometimes the venues themselves, no matter how many cameras you put in or whatever, they're just not lit brightly enough. So when you look at the Champions League and you see Chelsea at Stamford Bridge or whoever, there's a certain luminosity, there's a certain glow of the game. And, you know, be it multi-camera coverage for one of our outside broadcasts or single-camera coverage, it's very hard to recreate that in Bray, let's say. Even though, you know, there was some great moments in the game in Bray last Friday that I happened to be at. You know, so I'd like to think that, you know, we're all fans of the game, as well as being journalists, of course, and we try and promote the game as best we can in that regard as well. That doesn't mean we shirk the issues, of course. I won't even talk about the referee in the Bray game because that'll only get me into trouble. But nonetheless, you know, it's something, it's a labor of love for us. There's no question about that. And, a long season, you know, we've got a 35 week schedule, but, week two, only 33 to go.
Yeah, Miguel, how about that? You know, if we had the facilities or that to show the spectacular goals that are scored, it might benefit it.
I would agree with that, actually, because, I mean, one of the issues the league will always have is, and funny, this is right across all sports. I think I remember reading something about how it applies to Canadian gridiron with the NFL right on its doorstep. We have one of the most commercial, market-driven, glamorous leagues in the world right on our doorstep, and essentially, the league has to compete with that. So, issues like Tony was saying, like, as you said, the luminosity of the ground, which is a very good point, and even the, kind of notice at Daily Mount this year a little bit, which always seems to be so dark, that would help the perception of the league and make it more attractive to those kind of floating voters.
Having said that, I wasn't in Cork last week, but obviously a lot of my family were there and saying they haven't seen the cars backed up as far as the Kinsale Road for a long, long time, you know, so just all around Turner's Cross. The buzz is back in Cork, that's for sure. I expect an even bigger crowd this Friday. And that one is, of course, live on RT2 television, 7 o'clock.
Fantastic, Tony. And just before we close the show, you mentioned about the lads working on M&S and yourself as well. Like, it's a bit more of like a vocation or that. I mean, I know I've watched it a couple of times, and at the end of the season or on the last day, you guys do kind of little funny videos or that. I think we've seen you barging into a dressing room in an Elvis outfit before.
Yeah, I can't believe, that was a moment of weakness, perhaps. Yeah, we all did our bit. I think the best, though, was Johnny McDonald and Dave Berry, because the two of them, follically challenged, you might say. They each look like Right Said Fred, and they it haunts me to this day, I have to say, that vision of them in those tight sleeveless tank tops.
Well, it made for great viewing, it has to be said. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here on the Why Big Football Show. Thanks to Tom, Miguel, Neil and Tony for joining us on the Soccer Show by the fans, for the fans. We'll be back at the same time next week. I'll leave you with another one of Ireland's Euro 2012 songs. This is Three Colours.
Call me three colours, I'm fighting the dark. I answer questions with sarcastic remarks. Don't form my opinion, don't question my heart. For I am perfecting my own work of art. I have surrendered to a genuine call. Paid the respect, prepared for. Need to explore, I don't need to explain. Suffered for art, but it won't be in vain. Spectacular thoughts from a new shiny key. I have just three colours painted on me. Something I've never felt before. Don't worry for me, I've endured much worse. First time in my life I have lifted the curse. I have surrendered to a genuine call. Paid the respect, questions with sarcastic remarks. Don't form my opinion, don't question my heart. For I am perfecting my own work of art. I have surrendered to a genuine call. I paid the respect, repair.